Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Chase the Wolf radio show. Appreciate you tuning in today. Today is March 7th, 2021, and we appreciate each and every one of you tuning in, listening in this morning. Hopefully, you're listening live, and if you're not, then you're checking us out on podcast, and we appreciate that as well. This is the Chase the Wolf radio show. It's put out by the CTW Media Group and Chasing Wolf Productions. You can find us on the web at ichasethewolves.com. If you want to call in today, you can call us by the number of 516-453-9103. That's 516-453-9103. Today's show is Wolves Afar, Foreign Terrorist Threats. Now, we had a show back in, I think it was December 20th of last year. We talked about domestic terrorism, terrorism by domestic wolves at that time. This is foreign wolves, foreign terrorist threats, and that's what our show is about today. As I do for all of our shows, I would like to give a shout out to our military members, wherever you are at, you know, stateside, overseas, special assignments, special missions that you're on. You know, I just hope that the blessings are sent your way and that you stay safe and that you return home very soon. And if you're stateside, I hope you're spending some great quality time with your family, as I know many of you are. And sometimes you have to take away and go to training, but when you come back, make sure you get that quality time in with those family members, you know, even your four-legged family members as well. They miss you terribly. I can tell you that as well. I also want to reach out to our law enforcement community, our law enforcement members who are out there in the various parts of the United States and overseas. You are at the very front line in helping to protect and watch over us. You are the sheepdogs, as many people would call you. Whether you're in the dispatch services or which is extremely important. I've done a number of dispatching over the years as a police officer, police detective, so I'm very familiar with that those assignments out there as well. So each and every one of you, stay safe, go home to your family members. Security professionals, many times you are on the front lines. You are the the last line of defense. And many times you are, but you do a number of different, whether you're in a retail environment, whether you're in a construction environment or, gated community, your services is much, very much needed. You have certain duties and responsibilities and, your clients that you work for, the people you work for, the companies you work for, they are all appreciative of each and everything that you do. Do it right, but, do it professionally out there. Fire EMS, you save many lives each and every year, and we thank you for that. our medical providers for everything you do during the pandemic, for, you know, trauma events, you know, just, you know, normal medical routine type things that you do. We appreciate each and every one of you as well. Also want to give a moment of silence, as I do at all of our shows, Chase the Wolf shows, the Protecting the Tribe series shows. Just give a moment of silence for those who have either paid the ultimate sacrifice, who have passed away from illness or, you know, traumatic events. We just ask to give a moment of silence, please, and we thank you for that. And for those of you who, you know, may have tuned in yesterday or didn't tune in yesterday, that moment of silence actually lasts a number of seconds, but because my mic is, you know, it's voice activated mic system that we use for this, it sounds like I've just given a, you know, a microsecond of a moment for that, but it actually lasts just a bit longer than that. And I hope you understand. It's a very remembering moment, and I think that, you know, they all, the families, the victims, they all deserve that moment of silence. So I appreciate it. Many blessings to each and every one of you as well. So welcome back. This is the Chase the Wolf Radio Show. This is our, I think, season 2, 12th show of the season since the first of the year, 2021. And again, appreciate you tuning in. As I like to do, I like to read an intro. Kind of changed up the intro just a little bit this morning. I'm going to repost it after a while. So, you know, we've talked about domestic wolves back in December of this past year. Now we're going to talk about foreign terrorist threats that are out there. So the lead-in, the intro, is do you have foreign terrorist actors in your state, your city, your community, or even living next door to you? The faces of wolves are many. Those faces, recognized or not, may be from the very people that you might call your neighbors, fellow workers, or even your friends. There may be people who that you pass by on a day-to-day basis, on the streets, at a restaurant, sporting events, or even at a mall. The faces that you might see, or in most cases, the faces that you do not see, may be that of a terrorist, a mass shooter, or even a suicide bomber. If you live in an overseas arena, if you're, you know, in another country, another region of this great world of ours, you know, you pass by many on these streets of the cities that that you live in, that you go to work in on a daily basis, and they themselves may be those foreign actors, those foreign terrorists that you pass by on a daily basis and don't recognize it. They may be, you know, watching the facility or the business where you work, the military encampment where you're at. They might be, you know, scoping the area out to plan such an attack at some other time. There are some actors that are behind the scenes. You never see them. Those are your cyber terrorists who are out there. And both cyber terrorists doesn't, you know, doesn't mean that they're, you know, smarties with the ITs here in the United States. They could be anywhere. They could be people, you know, foreign terrorism, that cyber terrorism that is done from overseas areas, arenas, you know, small little cities and towns that you would never even hear of. Until some type of investigative process is done. Terrorism by you know, foreign terrorist actors or foreign terrorist threats are seldom thought about, seldom realized, or seldom considered until something happens. In the unmasking of wolves, one finds that the faces of a foreign terrorist or foreign wolves are not so much like your own. These could be very, very people that, you know, from whatever nationality you are, they could look just like you. Maybe you're one. Who knows? Most Americans think that the acts of terrorism were planned from abroad, and many times they are. You know, when you talk about domestic terrorism, we did, as we did back in December, there's a lot of lone actors out there, lone wolves who are out there. But many times there's, you know, there's some type of funding. material support funding that I'll talk about here later on as well. People who contribute to the cause. They may not be the terrorist actor themselves who creates or does the crime of some form of terrorism, whether it's, you know, whether it's a suicide bombing, a homicide bombing, as many times as it's called, the shooting up or, you know, the taking of lives by, you know, firearms or by running them down with vehicles. I think it was just recently I read that up in Canada that that the individual up there who commandeered a rental vehicle and took it down a sidewalk there in Toronto and killed a number of people. He was just found guilty, and they threw out some defense, you know, strategies that was there, and maybe they realize that, you know, maybe that is terrorism. I can't understand why some of these countries, some of these legislators, some of these judges and stuff like that can't see things for what they are. You know, there used to be that there had to be certain elements that are there to, you know, call something, you know, terrorism by, you know, a foreign state or a foreign actor. Domestic terrorism laws have not been, you know, really scrutinized or finalized or really brought to the table as it should. And we've had, you know, years and years and years, as it brought out back in December, of domestic terrorist acts. But the foreign terrorist, you know, probably one of the first things that you would think of when you think of a terrorist is somebody over, you know, from the Middle East. When in fact, you know, the IRA was, a terrorist organization that's out there. There's numerous. There's white supremacists who are, you know, they create terror. They have lynched people in the past and such as that. So, you know, that's a terrorist act. And yet we don't want to call it what it is. There was one that was very recent that we did on our Wolfbit show that we did at the 9 o'clock hour this morning, you know, talking about terrorism and such as that. And you know, these events take place, and yet we don't want to call it terrorism. Let's see, what was it? It was over in Sweden, and it was the axe attack over there. There's a lot of knife attacks over. A lot of knife attacks in the UK. A lot of knife attacks in the UK, and they don't want to call it terrorism. What is it? Hate crime? Yeah, it's a hate crime because they hate, you know, the lifestyle that you live. They hate the government that you live in, and yet they live amongst you, amongst us. So these things need to be considered and watched over. So, you know, not all terrorist acts happen stateside. Not all terrorist acts happen from abroad, you know, outside of these United States. You may also think that the mere act of terrorism alone was orchestrated by or conducted by rogue foreign actors. It could be a foreign state, as we'll call it here in a bit. Nothing could be further from the truth, nothing further from reality, nothing further from what we care to believe at sometimes. Sometimes it is what it is, and you know, we try to, you know, cover it up. We don't report it because, you know, it doesn't give that feel-good moment, that huggy bear moment, as we give that kumbaya moment, as I've called it many times. Because, you know, if we bring it out, then, you know, maybe the current administration is not doing all it can to rid itself of, you know, of the terrorism. You know, who do you blame? Do you blame the administration, or do you blame the complacency of our government and of our people? Because it's complacent moments. You know, when you talk about the Boston bombing and the people that live near those two brothers. You know, they never even, you know, the people that came in contact with never even thought of that. You never even really considered it when you watched them on the videos until those horrendous acts took place. How horrifying was it? It was terrible. And if you watch some of the docuseries, the documentaries that following it up and what they did in the investigation process and such afterwards, or people like Richard Reed, the sneaker bomber that was going to try to blow up that airline. You know, the military service member, the army guy, who's a major that shot up, you know, that military base. What was it? I think it was Fort Hood, Texas. So you've got, you know, what caused the radicalization? What caused the what was the indoctrination that they had? Were they schooled in, performing terrorist acts in a foreign country and then came here and became citizens? And then, you know, are they sleeper cell type people? That's something you don't hear and listen about often, but that could very well be. And then there could be a triggering event, a triggering moment that is brought to light. You know, I've read books from Vince Flynn that talks about, you know, it's fiction, but you know, it's some of the research and the basis for some of the information that's put in these, you know, fictional books, well, you know, or things that happen in real life. It happens, you know. Some of the contributors to some of Vince Flynn's books for many years were people who were in the know about these things. So, you know, those are all things to consider as well. There's a history of terrorism in the United States, generated from the United States, and then there's a history of terrorism in these United States that was brought here from abroad. 9/11 is one of them. World Trade Center bombing is another. You know, when you have subway attacks or the potentials of subway attacks and stuff like that, you know, some of that started overseas as kind of a trial type thing and putting together, see if they could do it. But there's been mass plannings of events taking place here, right here in the United States and stuff that, you know, a lot of people don't know about. They don't hear about it. It's not reported up, or, you know, you watch such a one-sided, censored mainstream media news station that you know wants to keep you away from that and keep you in that warm, fuzzy feeling moment, you know, your sheepled moment, as many of you are. So there's a lot of you know, when you talk about terrorism, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it that's came from afar. You know, you look back in the history of terrorism over the years and quite a bit of a domestic terrorism here for years. But, you know, in the early, you know, history of mankind, there were different forms of terrorism. There were different forms of terrorism that was used in the Revolutionary War or even in the Civil War. For those who, you know, tend to, you know, follow history. I know many of you don't. Hopefully you're not listening to my show today because I really don't care for you to. But for those who do care, those who do care about history, then it is what it is. I, you know, there are here in the United States, and we talk about terrorism, we'll talk about international terrorism in a moment, but there's, you know, there's many cities that are quite concerned day in, day out that, you know, some form of terrorism, whether it's domestic or foreign, happens within their jurisdiction, within their city, within their town, within their, you know, area. You know, or that, you know, certain airlines are, you know, held captive and, you know, terrorists get on these airlines and then they crash it into buildings or they crash it into fields and such as that, or they crash it in places like Lockerbie, Scotland, blow it up over the, you know, the countryside there. So there's a lot of concerns about there. When you have soft targets, you know, when you have mass amounts of people who congregate together, you know, those are soft target moments. When you have the shootings in Las Vegas, that was, you know, and they talked about, and I've worked on some of that as an expert witness, when they talked about people gathered together and it was reported, it was like, and some of the news reporting that came out was, it was like shooting, you know, fish in a barrel. Well, that's a rough way of putting it out, a rough way of sharing that moment, but that's pretty much what it was. You had a mass of people together, and so the soft targets were easy to acquire. There was, you know, it wasn't difficult for that lone individual to to be able to do such act. You know, the jihad, you know, a holy war against, you know, people in the United States, people in other Western civilization countries. You know, that's out there. There's a radicalization movement, you know, an indoctrination of people that, you know, once assembled, and whether it's, you know, a collection of you know, a small group of people or even a large assault, you know, you could consider it a large assault when you had 19 members. You know, it was supposed to be, I think, 20 members at least, but at least 19 members who brought down the jet airliners, four jet airliners that on 9/11. That's a lot of people, you know, put together in a single operation, even though it was, you know, scattered and at different locations, key locations. But there was a lot of advance. There was a lot of planning on that. There was a lot of things that were put in place and monies funneled from these, you know, state terrorist groups and such as that. Great influence from abroad, influence from, you know, radicalized imams or whatever who's out there and trying to get their followers to do exactly what they want, to create, you know, a terrorist event, to create fear among those in the Western world, and maybe not even the Western world. If, you know, you hear of, you know, Indonesia and places like that where there's terrorist events, you hear of terrorist events in, you know, South Africa, in South America, you hear, you know, such things as taking place as well. And you would also find that some of these terrorist actors are working in concert with things like, you know, for the drug trade or smuggling trade or such as that, and things that you have to be concerned about, maybe coming up even from our southern border, as we talk about. So when you talk about terrorism, you know, it's best to know maybe a definition of what terrorism is. Some of you know, you've watched movies, you've watched videos, you've watched you know, events, you've watched, you know, whether it's, you know, Angel Has Fallen or something along that lines, you know, you know, attacks on this nation, attack on certain things. Some of you would say that even some of the attacks on January 6th was, you know, domestic terrorism, but yet you don't call it domestic terrorism when it's radicalized Antifa or Black Lives Matter. So, you know, you know, you need to get your definitions together on that, of what it is. You know, with international terrorism, and I'm taking this off of a publication from the FBI, it's violent criminal acts committed by individuals and or groups who are inspired by or associated with designated foreign terrorist organizations or nations, which is called state sponsors of terrorism. You know, the domestic side of it is a little different. These are domestic actors, not necessarily foreign actors, but, you know, foreign actors can infiltrate, they can embed themselves in these United States and thus become domestic terrorists as well. There are lone offenders. People sometimes call them lone wolves. You get some people who are the talking heads or experts in the field that says, you know, it's many times, you know, it's not really lone wolf. It's, you know, there's other influences that's happened. There's, you know, financial influences, there's material influences. There's, you know, somebody goes out and buys, you know, some type of explosives material and then provides it or rents a vehicle to go blow up an army barracks or something like that. Those are, you know, there's a lot of people that might be involved. A lot of people's hands are in it, even though they may be, you know, unnamed players in association to it. A lot of different types of terrorism, you know, whether it's a lone wolf group or it's, you know, internet and social media. A lot of terrorists that do their recruiting on social media. And, you know, what do? Everyone's on the social media. Everyone's on that social media platform and they share and they talk about, well, you know, do you Does somebody just share something, maybe a manifesto, and you share it and you just like it and move on? You don't really read the content of what's being said, or find out, you know, look at somebody and see if there's triggering moments or what might be leading up to an event. You know, people live next door to some of these foreign terrorists, or domestic terrorists here in the United States or abroad, live next to them and never know it. There was an event that took place many years ago in the Middle East, back where I was stationed. There was a first sergeant and a host nation workers that worked on the military base where I was at. And one afternoon in a roadway leading away from Istanbul, Turkey, the vehicle was commandeered. It was pulled over. These terrorist actors dressed in military uniforms stopped the vehicle. They shot and killed all of the, you know, it was a driver and several host nation people that was in that, and also a military service member, a first sergeant who had only, you know, weeks left in country before he returned back to the States. And so this happened, and you would never hear it. You didn't have back in the 70s the 24/7 news stations to hear about it. And I called my dad after the event and told him about it, and of course he said you never heard it. Now my dad is, you know, God bless him, he is liberal or Democrat. And so he listens to only certain news stations. And I don't know, back then you didn't have Fox News. You didn't have, you know, Newsmax and other stations along that line. So you probably would have never heard anything. You didn't have CNN. You didn't have headline news. Back then you had your CBS, NBC, ABC affiliates in national news. And you didn't hear a lot of it. You know, didn't hear a lot of that taking place. But it actually did. And that was a terrorist event. In association with that. Middle East, back in that time, we were shot out by foreign terrorists at the time who did not like Americans. And, you know, that's just something that, you know, we had to deal with. There's, when you talk about protecting yourselves, and we'll reach out in another segment of this show after the break, but we're going to talk about protecting ourselves and from such events. So when you talk about domestic terrorism, you know, there's eco-terrorism, there's right-wing, there's left-wing extremists who are out there. There's people who are, you know, white supremacists who are out there. There's, you know, whether it's Sibonese Liberation Army that's out there, the Weathermen, the Earth Liberation Front, the Army of God, the Animal Liberation Front, just to name a few. You know, we had a Patriot Act put in place a number of years back, and it talks about, you know, acts of terrorism here in these United States, more specifically the domestic terrorism. But for domestic terrorism, for the purposes of authorizing law enforcement investigations, however, there's no federal criminal offenses that exist that refers to those domestic terrorism events. So those are things to look at. There's an FBI paper that I'm going to read from here in just a minute. I think we'll go to a break first, and then on the other side, we'll talk more about that and talking about terrorist attacks and foreign terrorist threats here in these United States and international terrorism such as that. I think we'll go to a break real quick. On the other side of the break, we'll come back to the Chase the Wolf radio show, Wolves of Far, Foreign Terrorist Threats. My name is Dan Meadows, and I'll see you on the other side of the break. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone, to Chase the Wolf Radio Show. This is put out by the CTW Media Group and Chasing Wolf Productions. Coming to you live from our studios in Western North Carolina. Hope you're having a great day today. Appreciate you tuning in. You can find us on the web at ichasethewolves.com, ichasethewolves.com. You find us each and every week on blogtalkradio.com/chasethewolf. Facebook, facebook.com, ctwmediagroup.cwp, twitter.com/ctwmediagroup. If you have something that you want to talk about on terrorism, foreign terrorism more specific, you can call us at 516-453-9103. Coming to you live each and every Saturday and Sunday mornings from about 10 a.m. in the morning. We also have our Wolf Bits news we put out on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Appreciate you coming back. On the other side of the show, we're talking about foreign and domestic terrorism. We're going to get a little bit more into international terrorism now. It says, this is from a Senate committee hearing on intelligence in Washington, D.C. It's an older paper from a testimony that was put out by the FBI years ago. And it reads that the terrorist attack of September 11, 2001 marked a dramatic escalation and a trend of more destructive terrorist attacks, which began in the 1980s. Before the September 11 attack, the October 23, 1993 truck bombing U.S. and the French military barracks in Beirut, Lebanon, which claimed a total of 295 lives, stood as the most deadly act of terrorism. That was until September 11, 2001. Casualty rates were, 10 times that over in at the September 11th attacks. There were more than 3,000 victims that were associated to that attack in a number of different locations, not just in at the Pentagon, not just in New York or in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, just at a number of different locations collectively, both people on these planes, people on the ground. And it's troubling each and every year when you watch the commemoration of the survivor, the people who were, whether they survived or whether they were victims of the 9/11 attack and how it's affected their lives and how it continues to affect people's lives nowadays as well. International terrorism involves violent acts or acts of dangerous to human life that are in violation of criminal laws of the United States or any state, or that would be a criminal violation if committed within the jurisdiction of the United States of America. Acts are intended to intimidate or coerce civilian populations, influence policy of government, or affect the conduct of government. These acts transcend national boundaries in terms of which they mean, which they are accomplished, the persons they appear intended to intimidate, or the locale in which the perpetrators operate. As events during the past several years demonstrate, both domestic and international terrorist organizations represent threats to Americans within the borders of the United States and within certain territories and boundaries in our overseas as well. Let's see. International terrorism. In general terms, the international terrorist threat to U.S. interests can be divided into three categories. There is a radical international jihad movement. There is a formalized terrorist organizations, and then there are state sponsors of international terrorism. Each of these categories represents a threat to U.S. interests abroad and, of course, in these United States. Some of the players, some of the organizations, some of the threats, you have ISIS, you have Al-Qaeda, you have Hamas, are just to name a few. You have the Taliban, the Islamic regime of the Taliban, who are out there. Of course, the threat from Al-Qaeda is only part of the overall threat from a radical international Shiite movement, which is composed of individuals of varying nationalities, ethnicities, tribes, races, and terrorist group memberships who work together in support of extremist goals. When you have radicalized ideologies and you have radicalized agendas that promotes the use of violence against the enemies of Islam, against the United States and other Western places are enemies of Islam. And yet they want to come here to the United States to, infiltrate into here, to embed themselves in here so they can work from within to spread their radicalized beliefs and the radicalized behaviors and their indoctrinations into violence and such. The enemies of Islam want to overthrow the government that are not part of their Sharia law, the Quran. Some of the primary objectives of this movement is the planning and implementation of large-scale, high-profile, high-casualty terrorist acts or attacks against the interests of the United States and its citizens and its allies worldwide. When we talked about the shoe bomber, the sneaker shoe bomber, that was Richard Reed. That was back in December 22nd, 2001. He was arrested on the flight. Luckily, his attempts to bring carnage and death to other people that was on the plane with him did not go through. A flight attendant seen him trying to ignite an improvised explosive device in his sneaker on a Paris to Miami flight, being aided by both the flight attendants and passengers. They were able to subdue them and hold them down until they made an emergency landing in Boston, Massachusetts, at Logan International Airport. So, that's just one. And, some of you fly, I fly, and know perfectly well that if something took place like that on a flight that I'm on the one that crashed into Shanksville, I think it was Shanksville, PA, years ago. Know this, I would have probably been one that would have, went to the rally cry and let's do this type of thing. Let's do this type of moment. Let's roll, as they called, and trying to overtake the plane back from these terrorists. It amazed me that mace, box cutters were even allowed. I've flown on flights for many, many years since the 70s. And there are times I couldn't even get a nail clipper on there, much less, something. I've got a Cubaton that I use for in law enforcement for many years. Can't fly with it, but yet they let box cutters and mace on board. It's just, that amazes me that took place, and sadly that it did. You have these international actors, these foreign wolves who are involved and who are, whether they're related by blood, by family, whether they are related because they were indoctrinated into the same order, the same group. Many times they know one another. Zachariah Massawi, who was involved in plotting and planning, and paid cash to learn how to fly 747-400s on simulators. But part of his training was not to learn how to land. When I was in Florida running a security group down there near Boynton Beach, Florida, where some of the 9/11 hijackers went to train. They went to train at a small airfield nearby, how to fly, large-scaled, large-sized planes, but not necessarily learn. We're taught how to land that plane, which should send up some type of red flags. And red flags should happen. Too many times here in the United States, we've become complacent. We've become too non-observant, if you will, of what's going on around us. We're afraid to say anything because it may be deemed as racially biased or ethically biased present such things, such suspicions. They don't want you to pat down people anymore. They don't want you to do stop and frisk anymore. And yet, some of the field interviews that was done in New York City and other places were used many times to stop to reduce the amount of crime that was going on, maybe even thwart some of the terrorist events that are placed that were planned at that time. If you look in some of the open case files with the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force and such, it's up there. Many of that was done because they were able to get field interrogation, field information, field interviews from just a simple stop. Should you target someone because of the skin color or because they're of a particular religious belief? No. But if they are, acting with great suspicion, acting with certain, counter observation type things, what they're observing, buildings or structures or whatever, or they're given tests of trying to test the system, push the system, see how far that they can get along with, the planning stages of, a terrorism event. A lot of that could possibly be stopped by, allowing law enforcement officers to do their damn jobs. There are weapons of mass destruction out there, and some of you would believe that, there's weapons of mass destruction was the pandemic, and some of you might be even right. As a biological warfare against these United States created in China. Here we go with, the China bashing and stuff like that. But, if that happened, if that was, and if the U.S. government even thought about, funding something like that, then, maybe that kind of information will come out. Am I a conspiracy theorist, or am I, sharing information that may be factual in nature? Well, something for you to find out. A lot of weapons of mass destruction out there that, it's not only, a nuclear bomb, which there's a lot of nuclear capabilities in places like Pakistan, which has a high presence of, terrorism activities taking place over in Pakistan as well. There's bioterrorism attacks. There was anthrax attacks. Back in 2001, there was at least 5 anthrax cases that I know of that took place back then. You have cyber terrorism, cyber threats. There's criminal threats, there's cyberspace that's out there, there's significant national security threats. Some of you may have had monies taken from your accounts, something you've ordered that you didn't order, somebody else ordered it, and maybe it's material that they needed. They were able to, hack into your accounts and take money to your accounts, use it for ill-gotten gain for other things out there. There's great response, and there has been for a number of years, from the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, New York City, part of that Joint Terrorism Task Force up there. There's counterterrorism operations that's out there. Back in 96, the FBI established, I think, and it could have been before then, but at least in 96, I remember reading the FBI had the counterterrorism center was set up to help combat terrorism on three fronts: international terrorism operations, both within the United States in support of extraterritorial investigations, domestic operations as well, and countermeasures in both domestic and the international terrorism arena. That was put up. There's interagency cooperation. There was a 9/11 commission report that was put out, and a lot of people read it. Shortly after was released a 9/11 commission report, and it talked about lessons learned, information sharing. And I think what has taken place since that time is a lot of that information sharing has gone away. It's been placed on the back burner. It's not as commonplace and well noticed as it used to be. There's a lot of agencies that outright refuse to share information, refuse to share information for things like, people who are illegal in these United States and they don't want to share that information. These local law enforcement agencies, state level law enforcement agencies, these sheriff's offices, stuff like that, they want to share information that could be vital, that may be vital, and you know, to national security. And yet they don't want to share it. They want to release these illegal immigrants and stuff in these United States to create horrendous crimes down on our southern borders and elsewhere throughout this great nation of ours. So those are things to worry about. So there needs to continue or go back to maybe some of the stuff that was done in lessons learned, information sharing right after 9/11. Go back to that. Don't let complacency, kill any more Americans here in these United States. They had threat warning systems. I remember it was Janet Napolitano that was in office, and she kind of, for that feel good, warm, fuzzy moment, she wanted to reduce or change or not bring it to the forefront of information sharing, the terrorist threat system. You never hear that in the airports anymore. I don't. The airports that I've flown in and out many times over the past few years, you've kind of heard that go away. Threat level orange, threat level yellow, or whatever. You've heard it go away. And so, here we go back into that complacency mode. Pearl Harbor was a complacency mode. 9/11 was a complacency mode here in these United States. And yet, maybe with the current administration, that's what we're going back to. We're trying to get back to the warm fuzzies versus the, protecting we the people here in these United States. There's National Infrastructure Protection Center that was put out. There's 24-hour initiatives that's done with some of the information sharing that's done with FBI and other things. There's all kinds of attacks that's happened. There's all types of things that's happened. You have, both here in the United States, you have Timothy McVeigh with a Mura federal building, Oklahoma City, blew that up back in, what was it? He was executed back in June of 2001, but that's an event that took place. There's anti-abortionist extremists like Clayton Lee Wagner. There's Yamzi Youssef, who's a mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. The World Trade Center was hit twice, and unfortunately, the second time really took them down. There's the Japanese Red Army fired rockets at the U.S. Embassy back in Jakarta, Indonesia, back in 1986 from a guy named Sutomu Shirasaki. There's all kinds of other events that's taken place. The potential bombing, the nearly carried out bombing of a New York subway system back in 1997. So the more information that's shared, the more details are shared, maybe the less likelihood that certain events might take place. When you're talking about the sophistication of international terrorists, the international jihadi movements that are out there, there's quite a bit of money associated with that, quite a bit of state actors that are in there, quite a bit of people in even in positions of power that are in support of such events to take place to bring down, whether it's bring down governments, bring down, social economic markets, just a lot of stuff going on with that. There's an escalating and ever changing environment here in these United States. It's a problem with domestic terrorism. There's a problem in, overseas as well, in overseas markets, some of the Western cultures as well. There's all kinds of pathways to radicalization that's out there. Whether it's the actual location, whether it's particular motives that are put out, whether it's someone's affinity or liking of extremist groups, their support of extremist groups that are out there. A lot of enablers, enablers of those who help provide that material support, provide the monies necessary to carry out these attacks, whether it's from a lone wolf or multiple people in a variety of countries. when we're talking about complacency, complacency kills. I've said that in law enforcement and training law enforcement people for years. And I say it even now, nowadays as well. Complacency kills, whether you're talking about self-defense of yourself, self-defense of your family, protection of a mutual assistance group or tribe or a survival group or whatever. Complacency kills if you're not on top of your game. A lot of times, you know, even in social media, you get that social media thing, you watch those little podcasts and stuff, watch them closely. Think about what you're seeing. If you don't understand it, if you think you got that gut feeling that something is wrong about that, maybe it is. Share it with someone else. Share it with others who might be in the know. Share it with law enforcement. Share it with people in you know, responsible areas of government. I'm not saying all areas of government are responsible. Some might sweep it under the rug, and whereas others may step up to the plate, like Dan Crenshaw or Madison Cawthorn, step up to the plate for things here in these United States. You're God bless Rush, who used to talk about such things, or Sean Hannity or Dan Bongino, who talk about such things, who have a general care and concern for these United States out there. But if you see something, you need to say something. And if you say something, you may need to do something. Doing something is researching some of those, you know, broadcast intent, that information that's put out. Maybe it's being broadcasted. Maybe it's a manifesto. Maybe it's, there's been, homicides and suicides on the internet and such, and or planned events, and they want to broadcast to everyone to get their few minutes of fame out there. If you see something, you got to say something to someone else. Report it up. Observe and report things along that line, whether it's Facebook postings, Twitter feeds, podcasts, presentations, or whatever. Put the word out. There's certain triggering events that that take place. You need to look for those triggering events. You need to look for changes in people's mannerisms or attitudes or thoughts and such as what's going on. Their changes in behavior. Those could be key indicators, key triggering moments for someone to the next step is the actual act. The act of, it could be a terrorism event. It could be a mass shooting. It could be a suicide bombing. It could be anything along that lines. Sometimes it's political. Sometimes personal grievances. It could be, that they don't like things that goes on in these United States. They don't like women dressing up in bikinis and stuff. They don't like men, doing certain things, being a good old boy, whatever. They don't like the American way of life. They don't like all of the stuff that they see. They don't like what they see on TV and such. And so they're going to, maybe plan their event, maybe broadcast that plan out. And so it's incredibly important to try to keep up with that. We've just got a few minutes left coming up on about a six. If you're a citizen, you want to protect yourself, you want to protect others, there's ways of doing it. And part of terrorism prevention is, information sharing and analysis. If you're in law enforcement, share the information, share the analysis, share your gut feeling, share things with other agencies that are out there. There are places that, as security managers, security consultants, security advisors, you need to look at your facilities. You need to harden those facilities as much as you can. There needs to be threat recognition programs and talk threat recognition to members who are out there. If you see a package bomb, I talked about in Wolfbit News earlier, there was a polling station in Iowa recently. There was a pipe bomb that was left there. If you see something, say something. Don't touch it. You don't know what you're doing with it. It may go off. Don't broadcast it and announce it with a radio signal or telephone signal. Move away. Get people away from it and let the professionals come in as they are. There's terrorist interdiction. There's training exercises. There's drills and stuff that law enforcement should be doing, because things will happen. They will happen again, and when we least expect it. If you're a citizen, you need to remain aware of your surroundings. You need to remain calm. You need to refrain from oversharing your personal information with people. You know, don't get close to people who you really don't know. Get close to your family, get close to your friends, but people who really don't know, don't overshare. Don't broadcast that, oh, well, I'm going to be out of town for a couple of weeks, and so no one's going to be at my home, and, you know, it's now opened up for people to come in and steal and take from you, and maybe use that as a gainful moment for, you know, maybe some kind of terrorist act itself. You know, you need to insulate yourself, but, you know, if you see radicalized behavior, if you need to report up suspicious behavior and stuff like that, make sure you do that. Make sure you turn it over to people who care about you, care about your society, care about your communities, your families, and whatever. It's been a really great show today. I do appreciate it. We're coming up 3 minutes and change as we go. We rolled out our first Wolf Bits News this morning, about a 30-minute news segment on at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings. If you didn't catch it then, you can always catch it on a podcast. You can also, we had our Protecting the Tribe series yesterday at 10 o'clock. We talked about, you know, protecting yourself, protecting your tribe, protecting your mutual assistance group, your survival group, your preppers group. We talked about that then. So if you don't get us live, make sure you tune in on podcasts and listen to it. We have a lot of great shows that we've done. Next week's show on Saturday, the Protecting the Tribe series, we have tribal mutual assistance groups. So we've talked a little bit about it. We talked about expanding it. We talked about protecting it. Now we're going to get into the functionality of those groups and what they're there for and why we would have it. Wolf Bits News, you'll find us at 9 o'clock next Sunday morning. We talk about old news. We talk about current news. We talk about new news. We talk about cold case files and murders and events that took place in your area. If you got information on that, you can always share it with us, and we'll research it and try to put it on as well. Next week's Sunday show at 10 o'clock, our Chase the Wolf radio show, Shadow Wolves, the Deep State Wolves. Now, you know, I read something this morning. Somebody said, well, you know, Who's running the show for the Biden-Harris ticket? And my response was, you know, just check the strings, follow it back to whoever it's tethered to, because it's the puppet masters, the oligarchs, the certain political figures who is actually running the game there in Washington State. You know, draining the swamp is a got my 90-second cue. It's a necessity. So, you know, whether you believe that or not, entirely up to you. If you would, also, we chase the two-legged wolves, not the four-legged wolves. If you could, go by nywolf.org, nywolf.org. Support, donate to the Wolf Conservation Center. Those are your four-legged critters, your creatures in the wild. They need your help. They need your support. Please reach out to them. Each and every week, we come to you with Wolf Bits News, the Chase the Wolf radio show that Protecting the Tribe series shows. And we appreciate each and every one of you tuning in. I hope you learned something today. I hope you, information sharing with other people. Watch out for the terrorist threats. They are out there. One day you might be able to help spoil their event. Anyway, God bless you. I appreciate you. And as each and every week I ask you to do, make sure you chase the wolf.